Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
So joining us is Mark Ebner, the Mark Ebner. Thanks for being here, Mark.
Okay. I'm feeling your tongue firmly planted in your cheek there when you describe Scientology as a well-respected church, but if that's how you feel, then we're going to war, my friend. Other than that, have at it.
Yeah, no, that's just it's crazy. I looked at the Scientology church from the start, and just looking at L. Ron Hubbard, it's he's just disgusting, rotten teeth. How can anybody follow that? And I still can't wrap my head around it.
Well, if you want to talk about L. Ron Hubbard, you can start with the truth about L. Ron Hubbard. Yes, he was a prolific science fiction writer. He actually garnered a bunch of fans with his science fiction over the years. I can't take that away from him, but at some point in his career, as the story goes, he decided that working as a Nicola Word science fiction author wasn't going to cut it. And in conversation, he said that if you want to make $1 million, start your own religion. And that's exactly what he did. Except none of what he started was his own. Sort of springboarding off a deep, deep resentment that he had for the mental health field at the time, what he did was he actually borrowed techniques and, a mishmash of other things from the mental health community, particularly at the time it would have been Freud and Carl Jung, and he threw that into a pot and came up with something he called Scientology. Now, what's interesting is that he wrote a book called Dianetics at a time where here in the States anyway, we were kind of receptive to these. This is pre-New Age stuff, but that's the spirit it was taken in. He made a lot of promises. L. Ron Hubbard promised total freedom. He promised a bridge to total freedom. He promised a lot of things that he could not deliver on. He knew that. So what he did was he essentially set up a Ponzi scheme that is still victimizing people, although not many, to this day.
Yeah, it's crazy.
He's a Ponzi guy.
Yeah.
Carnival barker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now it's Miscavige that does it.
David Miscavige. That would be Tom Cruise's best buddy. They like to wrestle together. They ride motorcycles together. And they both are on a seemingly endless promotional tour for the dwindling cult of Scientology. Yeah.
Yeah, they're struggling. But they've got the IRS tax exemption, and that really is what keeps them alive.
Exactly. That's the sticking point. And, you know, you'll see that Leah Remini, with her Scientology and the Aftermath series on A&E, partnered with Hubbard's former, well, Miscavige, I should say, David Miscavige, the self-appointed chairman of the board of Scientology, paired with him, they are essentially walking billboards for the cult. The only problem is that their actual membership is dwindling to the point where, while they claim millions of members worldwide, right now I would say a liberal estimate of the current membership would be about 20,000 worldwide.
Wow.
Now, I mean, you say, how do they exist? Well, they exist because, A, they're real estate rich, and, B, they have, and I think I need to kind of tip my hat to Tony Ortega over at the Underground Bunker, who's been emphasizing this. The reason how they stay afloat is because of the quote-unquote whales that they've meant to that they've managed to keep in the flock. Now, a whale in Vegas is, you know, a casino's best friend. It's the, you know, the guy from Taiwan or, you know, from wherever, who comes in with an enormous stake prepared to lose it on the gambling floor. These are people who are more than happy to throw good money after bad. You find that in the celebrity realm. Nancy Cartwright was recently, for lack of a better word, exposed. For your listeners, Nancy Cartwright is the premier voice of voices on The Simpsons Show. Mm-hmm. She's donated $15 million to Scientology, and she's just one of them. You know, money is coming in from the remaining celebrities in Scientology. You know, vast amounts from Tom Cruise, Kirstie Alley, Beck, who else? Ann Archer, John Travolta, his wife, you know, and on and on and on. You know, so that's quite a cash infusion for them. However, the jury's out on Scientology. The secrets are out. You know, I practically made a cottage industry out of exposing Scientology, basically, you know, out of self-preservation, because when I wrote the expose, Do You Want to Buy a Bridge, for Spy Magazine back in 1996, they've been harassing me ever since. I knew that going in, as you mentioned when we were talking earlier, you know, what I did to foil their efforts was my lead paragraph in that story said, look, you know, I'm an ex-drug addict. I've been arrested. I've been under psychiatric care. I owe the IRS $6,000 at the time that they're well aware of. And being that it was in the Clinton era, when I wrote that story, I said, I've masturbated and inhaled at the same time. So Scientology, so cult, take your best shot. Well, they've tried and they fail at every turn because my resolve against that kind of harassment was to, every time they came after me, was to write 10 more stories about Scientology. And I've done as much over the years.
So you actually, to do that, you walked in Scientology and said you want to be a Scientologist, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And I figured that was the only way. I had very limited knowledge about Scientology. In fact, when I pitched the story, I was just kind of bewildered by all these sailor-suited swabbies that were marching around Hollywood. They marched like they had a purpose, but they didn't really seem to be getting anything done. And, you know, I was like, who are these people, these drones, you know, walking around wearing lanyards and and stripes on their ersatz naval costumes? You know, who were these people? But I was warned that they would come after me. So I had to do my diligence, and that I did.
So given that, I think it would be a fair statement to say that another way that they keep their numbers up is intimidation for errant members or members that are straying.
Yeah, I don't know how that keeps their numbers up. I mean, the goal, as expressed by L. Ron Hubbard, and these were his words about dealing with quote-unquote enemies or critics of the church, or in Scientology parlance, SPs, or suppressive people, was to, and this is doctrine, because you need to understand that anything Hubbard said or wrote became unalterable scripture in Scientology. It's like a president when he speaks. He is a president. No matter what he says, that becomes policy when it's entered into the public record. Well, the same was true for Hubbard and his cult. And his instructions for dealing with critics was to lie, trick, harass, sue, and or otherwise destroy that person. That is doctrine. You know, and the goal was to, and I quote again, shutter them into silence. Okay? These are really drastic measures and drastic threats. And yet at the same time, it worked for years because people couldn't withstand, you know, a cult that was attempting to litigate them to death. I mean, you know, I've always, you know, said, unlike, I don't know, Synanon, if you remember them in the 60s, they were a Venice Beach, California-centered cult.
Oh, yeah.
And quasi-drug rehabilitation thing. You know, you see, the hallmark of a cult is to go after the weakest people, and certainly drug addicts are, you know, in the throes of their addiction, are very vulnerable to this sort of thing. Well, Synanon was later exposed as, to put it mildly, the snake in the mailbox cult. Scientology may not put a snake in your mailbox, but they will try to litigate you to death. However, they can't afford enough lawyers to go after every critic, when really the entire educated world today almost is against Scientology. Once again, the secrets are out, and I'm quite frankly proud of my small part into getting those secrets out there.
What do you think of Miscavige's wife? Where do you think she is?
Well, she's, I'm not quite sure. I know that she has been essentially imprisoned, in a Scientology property. Now, someone will need to correct me on this, but I think it may be up in Lake Arrowhead, or it's one of their remote properties. And she was pushed out of the way, essentially, when, for whatever reason, Miscavige got sick of her, or she said or did the wrong thing, And he just disposed of her, in the words of Hubbard, quietly, or so he thought, and without sorrow. You see?
Yeah.
It's just, they, you know, and this is how cults operate. They disappear people. And, you know, that, you know, becomes a whole other topic for the mystery element of your show. What happened to, you know, Shelley Miscavige? Well, you can see what happens to people in the fold that ask those questions. I mean, the whole reason why, well, one of the main reasons why Leah Remini left the cult was because she had the quote-unquote nerve at some event over, it was Tom Cruise's wedding, for God's sakes, I believe, to Katie Holmes at the time. She went up to Miscavige and said, hey, where's Shelley? And, you know, they were like, you don't have the rank to ask that sort of question. They created the animus. Fortunately, Leah Remini, in her, you know, deep down in her soul somewhere, she's a tough broad from Brooklyn, and she wasn't having it. And she woke up, she got out, and to her credit, you know, she did what you have to do if you leave at that level, and that is, you know, come at them with both barrels blazing. And I credit the Arts and Entertainment Network for giving her that platform.
You know, I wonder if she's under attack a lot now.
Oh yeah, no,
so.
She absolutely is. And more than that, any apostate, for lack of a better word, that comes on her show before the show is even over, with all their digital technology at hand at Scientology Incorporated, they've already prepared a hate video of, you know, the people that appear on her show. And they do this to try and discredit those people within their flock. But if you begin to look silly after a while, and this will show you the power of mind control, because all they're concerned with is, you know, appeasing their very small membership and their high-powered members, like celebrities and that sort of thing, to make them believe that they're doing okay and that anyone who speaks out against the church is a criminal. So what they do is they try and paint you as such. So, you know, for people to go on Leah Remini's show, they risk a lot in terms of, you know, exposure by the cult. But you have people like myself, platforms like your show, her show, Tony Ortega over at the Underground Bunker, who are very quick to point out that this is exactly how they harass, you know, actual free thinking individuals, you know, yeah, who frankly, you know, have every reason to complain about the cult because they are victims of a global scam that is Scientology. Back to my original point about Scientology being an insidious Ponzi scheme.
Well, you know, that's what
if Scientology delivered half of what they say they can deliver, then we'd have superhumans running all over the planet. You know, Tom Cruise is supposed to be at a level where he has control over what they call MEST, M-E-S-T, right? Matter, energy, space, and time. Well, if he's all that, how come he's still under 5'6" and stepping on apple crates during interviews? You know, how come he can't create a hit out of, you know, movies that he's actually bombed in? Now, someone could come to me and say, well, Mission Impossible is the biggest series. Oh, yeah, yeah, the movies make money. I get it. You know, those franchise movies.
Yeah.
But, you know, the guy, I can't take away for the fact that that guy's as old as me and he looks really good. And, you know, he looks good in front of a camera. You know, But does that mean he's, you know, a soulful actor at his core? I don't think so.
Yeah, no. He's terrible. Well, he is. I just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
I just wonder what confuses me is, okay, going clear, you know, all this mental stuff, make you a better person. But they have some really weird things in their religion, like weird beliefs.
Oh, wow.
Sure.
Yeah.
So that's what confuses me. When you start getting into aliens and beings and all this weird stuff, and you look at L. Ron Hubbard and you look at the whole setup, how do they buy into that upper level stuff?
Well, it's very simple. They you know, and this is how Ponzi schemes work. They loop you in with an offer you can't refuse. Scientology can help you with that. They pull you off the street. You know, for me, when I went in, they were like, well, what do you want to improve in your life? And I was like, I want to quit smoking. Okay, I was, you know, wandering down Hollywood Boulevard, and the way I went in to research my story was in through a Dianetics testing center. Okay, this is how it works. They were, at the time, they called them personality tests, and what they give you is essentially a pretty straightforward psychological test. And you know, they printed out the results and they said, "Ooh, you're angry." And I'm like, "Yeah, well, I'm walking down Hollywood Boulevard, chain smoking Newport cigarettes. Yeah, I got a bit of anger in me." You know, oh, Scientology can help you with that. And we can help you quit smoking. But then when I'm finally, you know, routed over to the big blue property on Sunset Boulevard, you know, Scientology Central in Hollywood, I find out that in the emulation of their fearless leader, the late megalomaniacal maniac L. Ron Hubbard, they all chain smoke, you know? So how are they going to help me quit smoking? They'll promise you anything, except, you know, it's all a joke because they really can't deliver on their promises. But here's the hook. When you come in, they start you off with basic auditing. Auditing is what? Greek for to listen, okay?
Yeah.
And they sit there and they put you in these quote unquote counseling sessions. They hook you up to this e-meter. So now it's all fancy. They've introduced a mysterious device, which is in essence basically a lie detector. And they start asking you questions. These are deeply personal questions about trauma that you may have had in your lifetime, or because it's a reincarnative cult, eventually with this, they will go into your, you see what I mean, your prior lives. But in the moment, what's happening is you're talking about things like, okay, I'll give you an example. Okay, Mark, take us back to a moment of trauma in your life. And I said, well, I fell out of a tree when I was 6 years old. I was knocked unconscious. I got a concussion. I went to the hospital. You tell them the story. And then they say, okay, let's go back to the beginning. Now, this is hours of this. So they get every detail of that specific point of trauma for you, right?
Yeah.
And you keep repeating it over and over again. And hours later, by the end of it, you're laughing. You see what I'm saying? Because it's so friggin' absurd at that point. And then they say, they look at the meter, and the needle on the meter starts floating, right? And they say, your needle is floating, that's a good sign. And they have you believe that you've blown the charge of that particular point of trauma. And then they go into other stuff. Give me another thing. Well, you know, Daddy touched me improper, you know, anything, right? Now, here's the insidious thing behind that. You are sitting there for many years if you choose to remain in Scientology, letting them record your innermost secrets. So, they've also had you sign a bunch of documents, so everything you say in an auditing room becomes property of Scientology Incorporated. You see what I'm saying? Right. Now they have a dossier on you that they own. So imagine if you're John Travolta, you know, and, you know, let's say theoretically you've had affairs with men and you don't feel good about that, right? And
right.
you want, and you divulge that in an auditing session. Well, guess what? If John Travolta ever decides to leave Scientology, or worse yet, speak critical about it, they would have no compunction about releasing, disseminating that dossier that they have on you to destroy you. So imagine having that hanging over your head. He's between a rock and a high place, a hard place. John Travolta cannot leave because they have the goods on him. How insidious is that?
And that was my theory. That's why I said that sometimes they can keep their numbers up through intimidation. That's what I meant.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Let's look at today's society. Yeah, but in today's society, do you think that would work? Because now we're a much more emboldened and a much more open society. Why can't our example here, John Travolta, say, okay, listen, I did it. It's behind me. I don't care anymore. You know, kind of take the approach that you have. Okay, I did these things. Enough.
Well, I can answer that. Why can't they? Because you got to understand, and you kind of mentioned this earlier in the conversation. When you're dealing with Hubbard's cosmology, the really pricey space alien type stuff, which, by the way, was brilliantly exposed in, I don't know if you saw it or not, but the South Park episode Trapped in the Closet that Matt Stone and Trey Parker invited me to come down and consult on.
Yes.
The highest rated episode of South Park ever, the Emmy Award winning nominated episode of South Park. In cartoon form, they revealed those secrets while at the same time flashing on the screen, this is what Scientologists believe. You know, with the volcano and Lord Xenu and OT3 and all that stuff. Now, it seems strange to the average viewer, but remember, this is the stuff that they fought years to protect because, you plebs are not ready for this yet. Of course not. That's how Ponzi schemes work, and that's how they come crashing down on you where at first you may feel like some sort of emotional.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Charge or relief, you know, in some of the hocus pocus they therapy and hypnosis they do to you by way of auditing early on. When you get up to those higher levels, you have to understand that, like John Travolta, Tom Cruise, Kirstie Alley, you have been indoctrinated to a point where you do not know black from white, you see? And you buy all that alien hocus pocus wholesale because it's being spoon-fed to you by the cult that has you to the point where you're going to believe that you can walk through a wall of fire, that you can control matter, energy, space, and time. All of these things are disprovable, but it all goes back to what my warning for anyone considering, you know, having anything to do with Scientology: do not ever underestimate the power of mind control. It's as simple as that. You know, this isn't a conspiracy theory. This is fact. And if there's one thing that Hubbard and Scientology perfected, was mind control. And, you know, and that's what they use. And it is powerful, and I'll give them that. But unfortunately, sooner or later, every Scientologist, no matter how deep you get into it, you know, actually snaps out of it or comes to or is guided out of it at some point in their life. And then they look over their shoulder and they say, oh, my God, I gave my life. I gave all my money to this. And guess what? Hubbard was wrong. This quote unquote technology does not work. And oh, my God. And then they're angry, you see, because, and who wouldn't be angry? I want my life back. I want my life back. And the only way to do that is to retaliate against the cult of Scientology. And that's why you see so many high profile ex-Scientologists who are doing just that. Jason Begay, you know, the actor who came out against them and said, come on, show me a clear. Who's gone clear? You know, give me a break. And on and on and on. And, you know, it's at this point, you know, I wish to say we were just in a place where we could just, you know, urinate on the grave of what was once an insidious control cult. But it's still going on because they have vast resources of cash from their quote unquote whales, and they have immense amounts of property. The ironic part is that this property, for instance, David Miscavige seems obsessed with opening up all these glittering, what he calls ideal orgs all over the world. You know, these fancy storefront Scientology buildings that are popping up everywhere. Okay, so they got the real estate, but is there anyone going in there for quote-unquote services? No. These places remain empty. But it's not coming out of Scientology coffers. They get their whales to finance these things. And then they give them a plaque that calls them, you know, a cheap plaque that calls them patron emeritus or whatever. And thanks for donating $15 million. You know, the, but back to the original thing. Yes, the real sticking point is the IRS. And that goes back to, I believe, in the 80s, Hubbard, when he was still somewhat coherent and vital, launched an operation called Operation Snow White. And he sent his wife. You see, Hubbard was a coward. Most narcissist sociopaths are cowards. But with him, it was extra special because he sent his wife in to do the dirty business of breaking into IRS offices, stealing documents, creating compromat, if you will, against certain high-level members of the IRS, and in essence, achieving what he did anytime he faced an enemy, and that was shutter them into silence. The IRS, cowards that they were, threw their hands up. They had dozens of lawsuits that were frivolously filed against them by Scientology, in addition to the crimes and subterfuge. And the IRS threw in the towel and awarded them 501c3 status, which means that they are a charitable tax-exempt organization. The problem is, all they needed to do was to look to Hubbard's doctrine, and they would find out there is no charity in Scientology. He had scripture about that that said there is no charity except with there is no charity without fair exchange. In other words, if we do something for you, we better either get paid or you better float us some members. Witness Scientology volunteer ministers. You may have seen them. The yellow-shirted troops that show up at disaster scenes. I saw them at 9/11 at Ground Zero when I was reporting there. You could see them all around the recent California wildfires. They're not there to help. You know, they're not there to do anything but to prey on the vulnerable, you know? And they do these little things called touch assist to, you know, supposedly to make people feel better in the moment. I won't get into what those are exactly because I don't want to bore your listeners, but they are there on recruiting missions. You see, no charity without fair exchange. They're a money cult. Time magazine had it before I did in Spy magazine. You know, with the Time cover story, Cult of Greed and Power. That's all they're about. And the IRS really dropped the ball on this one. And, you know, it's about time they changed that. They looked into this organization, recognized them as a criminal cult, and rescinded their 501c3 status. But you try and get the IRS to budge on anything, my friend. It ain't easy.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah. Shame on them. And by the way, the one thing I left out of that was, coward that L. Ron Hubbard was, sending his wife in. She got arrested. She did the crime behind Operation Snow White. And what did Hubbard do? He went off into international waters, literally on his wacky ship, as an unindicted co-conspirator. Sound familiar? Yeah. You know, there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable.
You also wrote a story for Rolling Stone, didn't you, Beck, with Cambridge student that killed himself?
Yes, Philip Gale, remarkable young man, got into MIT at the tender age of 14 years old. He was raised in Scientology. Both his parents were big-time Scientologists. In fact, his mother, Elizabeth Gale, was the head PR representative, PR spokeswoman for Scientology at the time. I just picked up a news item that a kid had thrown himself off the tallest building at MIT, and I didn't even know he was a Scientologist, but, you know, that's how I find stories. And I was like, Rolling Stone was putting together their college issue. So what I did was I pitched them the story, and next thing you know, I'm on a flight to Boston, Mass., get off at Logan, I go to Cambridge, and I'm walking around campus finding out about this prodigy. And, you know, looking for reasons as to why he may have killed himself on March 13th, which coincidentally was L. Ron Hubbard's birthday. Now, coincidences aside, remember, this kid was raised in Scientology. Now, also remember, he was a genius. So he managed to get out of Scientology while he was in college to the degree that he had some sort of freedom, if you will. But he also managed to out-logic Scientology. He recognized it for the BS that it really is. And he managed to extract himself from that. But couple that with a 14-year-old going to MIT. Couple that with having no real tools to exist socially in this breathing world, and you have a recipe for disaster. And it was really sad what happened. Well, anyway, I wrote the story. I was doing my diligence. I had to meet with his mother, and I said, look, I have written critically about Scientology. No question, Elizabeth. And she goes, yes, yes, I understand that. And I said, but this story is not a takedown in any way, shape, or form about your cult. I mean, I didn't say that, but I said about Scientology. This is about me trying to recreate the life of your son and to try and find an understanding of how he would come to kill himself at MIT at such a young age. And, you know, I said, so I would appreciate it, you know, if, you know, with that in mind, I could come up and meet you, interview you about your son with the understanding that my goal here is not to take down Scientology. She was like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, good. I went up there. I interviewed her and she ratted me out to Scientology. Scientology in turn sent a dead agent package, basically they dug up all the dirt that they could find on me. Ooh, big deal. Whoop-de-doo. You know, I write about crime. You have photos of me, you know, in proximity to criminals, you know, blah, blah, blah. You can say I'm biased, this, that. You know, they did, they threw everything at my employer at the time, which was Rolling Stone. Rolling Stone called me after I had filed the story, mind you, and said, hey, can you answer to this? And I said, I can, but I'm not going to. There's no reason why I should have to answer to that cult when it comes to a largely unrelated story. Yeah, there was Scientology was in there because you can't avoid it, given the fact that Philip Gale was raised in the cult. But other than that, it was about his life, you know, and his genius and what happened to him on that day that he decided to off himself. So I said, listen, I'm not responding to that. And they treated it like a deal breaker and they killed my story. So now you have a situation where if I was lawyered up, I could sue Scientology, you know, because they did exact damage on me. They, you know, they affected my livelihood. But instead, you know, the same old thing. I just come back at them 10 times harder. So in the end, Rolling Stone killed the story. I turned around. I brought it to my local weekly newspaper that I contributed to at the time, New Times. They put it on the cover. I double dipped. I got paid twice as a professional because I told Rolling Stone, pay me and pay me now. And they did, you know.
Yeah.
Which tells them that they knew that they, by killing my story, they were making a mistake. So I got paid twice. The story got out. It went around the world. It was focused featuring Philip Gale's sister, Elizabeth, more recently in the last season of Leah Remini's Scientology in the Aftermath. And years later, I was in a casual conversation. I won't mention that person's name. With my assigning editor of the original Philip Gale story for Rolling Stone, I said, what the F happened there, man? And he said, well, you didn't hear this from me, but Jan Wenner, the publisher and editor-in-chief of Rolling Stone at the time, is best friends with John Travolta. And that was his answer.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, if you look, go down that rabbit hole to look at the relationship between Jan Wenner and John Travolta, all you have to do is look at one of the worst movies of all time ever made, and that would be the movie. That would be perfect. The movie about aerobics.
It would.
And that was produced by none other than Jan Wenner. So yes, they did have a relationship, both professional, and I would imagine, given their, you know, proclivity, for men, if you will, all well and good, you know, who knows what their relationship was, but the thing was that it just made Rolling Stone look that much worse for killing my story in the first place because of an existing relationship between the publisher and a celebrity Scientologist who, by the way, is not even mentioned in the story. Death of a Nethead. Any of your listeners can look at it. I'm putting my website back together painstakingly, one story at a time, and I believe I have Death of a Nethead posted at www.hollywoodinterrupted.com. And, you know, people can read it and make up their own minds about that.
Yeah, and we'll link it to our site as well. I mean,
it's
really good. So have they left you alone lately, or are they still kind of
bugging? Well, lately, it's hard to say. I feel like they, you know, without being paranoid, I've had, you know, they've sent so many private investigators, you know, to my various residences through the years to go through my garbage and trying to dig up stuff on me. You know, you get inured to it after a while. Are they still following me? Of course they are, because I'm still outspoken. I'm still doing shows like this. Yeah. So, of course they are. But they also, I think by now they know that I'm the wrong guy to mess with, because I've lived up to my promise, and that was, come at me, I come at you 10 times harder. And I have succeeded in doing so for almost 20 years now. So, you know, needless to say, they haven't put up the hate video on me yet. You know, and I was on Leah Remini's show, and I expected it, but they don't do that kind of public stuff with me. I think with me, they just want to catch me in an alley somewhere and rough me up one day. I mean, I suppose that would be their dream, and good luck with that.
Yeah, they're more than welcome to go through my trash. All they'll find is, my God, this guy drinks a lot of Pabst.
Yeah. Pabst Blue Ribbon?
Yes, sir.
That's sad. Well, PBR seniors, huh?
Yeah. Well, one difference is you kind of own your stuff. And a lot of people like John Travolta and stuff won't. Like, they don't want to come out and, like, if you own it, like Howard Stern or like you own it. Yeah, I did this, I do that, I do this. So what? People know it. So it's not like it's not like it's going to affect your career, you know, anything like John Travolta. If all this stuff comes out, it might affect his movies. It might affect his fans, you know, and he won't own it. He'll fight it.
Yeah, but
right. I
see what Al's saying, but I think we're in a more open society nowadays, a more accepting society.
Well, I don't know. I'm kind of mixed on that, because I think that if someone comes out and says that all of a sudden John Travolta's coming out and he's like been renting boys for 20 years, a lot of people that support him and love him as John Travolta in one image are not going to anymore.
I would agree with you, but I would also agree that, you know, just off the subject of Scientology, the man's work has been, you know, pretty, you know, I'll give credit to Quentin Tarantino for somewhat resurrecting his career with Pulp Fiction. But remember, that was almost, you know, a couple of, you know, that was years and years ago. But, you know, he also did Battlefield Earth. I warned than not to make that movie. You know, I got a copy of the script long before they ever went into production. I tore off the cover page. I renamed the script Dark Forces, something generic. I picked a screenwriter, fake screenwriter name that sounded vaguely tabloidish and British. I called him Desmond Finch. And I submitted that script to various story analysts, script readers, and studios, agencies. I sent it out. I was writing for a magazine called Black Book out of New York at the time. And essentially what I did was they all came back and they all passed on the project. And they were like, this is horrible. This is the worst thing I've ever read. You've got to be kidding me. This is nonsense. The story doesn't make sense, blah, blah, blah. And we published the coverage, which was a flashing red light saying, don't make this movie. Well, they made the movie. As it turns out, it is arguably one of the worst movies ever made, if not the worst. And I had the pleasure of, in 2000, I was doing a radio show, a little syndicated radio show, five major cities, and I had the author, J.D. Shapiro, the original writer of the Battlefield Earth script, on my show with the owner of the Razzie Awards, which gives away the awards coincident with the Academy Awards every year for the worst movies. I had him present the Razzie Award to J.D. Shapiro, and J.D., being the good sport that he was, he accepted that Razzie Award on my show. So fait accompli with Battlefield Earth, which was absolutely horrible. I also showed up at the big press event they had for the International Press Corps at the Four Seasons Hotel in Los Angeles. I walked in, the flax and publicists were all like, Ebner, questions about Scientology. I was like, sure, right. Well, my first question to Travolta was about the parallels between Battlefield Earth and L. Ron Hubbard's, anti-psychiatry war that he had started. And I was like, wasn't this all a metaphor for anti-psychiatry? You know, the evil people, one that you portrayed in the character Turl, weren't they called cyclos? You know, yeah. I mean, flashing red lights, here you go. And Travolta just leaned into me and called me a sociopath. Okay, next question. So I said to Barry Pepper, the star of the movie, I said, hey, there was a scene in this movie where for reasons unexplained, a cow standing in a pasture gets one of its legs blown off by a space gun. It gets its leg, vaporized. I said, what did that have to do with anything? Barry Pepper got all indignant, and he started saying, well, this is a popcorn movie. This is supposed to be fun. I said, well, what's fun about blowing off a cow's leg for no reason? And he said, hey, do you wear leather shoes? Do you wear a leather bag? So he was trying to make it look like I was the bad guy. Yeah, so I was just like, okay, next question. And this capped it. Forrest Whitaker, who I admire greatly, great actor. I said to him point blank, I said, Mr. Whitaker, what was this movie about? He took a moment. He leaned back in his chair. He's got this wonderful wonky eye, And he scratched the back of his head, and he looked at me, and he said, I don't know. And that was that.
It says it all.
I got escorted out. They were like, okay, that's enough, Ebner. They practically zip-tied me and escorted me to the street. I see a bunch of Asian, fans, I guess, who had congregated because, as I said, this was the Foreign Press Association press conference, and they were waiting for Travolta. And he came out, and he was like, "Hey, everybody, did you like the movie?" And you could hear a collective, "Oh, no." And then you hear one Asian girl in the background going, "But we love you, John." And that was it, and I left. You know, so needless to say, you know, it hasn't been this battle with Scientology fraught with, you know, all kinds of things that I could complain about, because let's face it, bashing Scientology with hard facts and evidence against them is a tremendous amount of fun, just like we're having on your show.
Well, yeah, it's great, and time goes. We're out of time, but Mark, now what's your website so people know?
Well, the website, like I said, I'm putting it back together one story at a time. They can definitely see Death of a Nethead at www.hollywoodinterrupted.com. I'm doing a true crime podcasting for the people on my podcast called The Gray Zone with Mark Ebner. You can download that on iTunes or go right to Liberated Syndication and listen to it there. And I'm out and around, you know, for anyone listening who wants to exchange thoughts on the side, I'm pretty transparent. Hit me the same way you guys found me, markebner59@gmail.com. I've enjoyed my time on your show, fellas, and look forward to the next.
Thank you very much, and I recommend everybody listen. It show's great, and he's a great character. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.